to the ACUFP Resident Podcast. This is going to be part of an ongoing series of podcasts hosted by the members of ACUFP Resident Council. Hello, everyone, again. Welcome back to our ACUFP Resident Podcast, where we pad our degree with the OFP. Again, here with us are
Annie Hutchinson,
Carrie Beth Watts,
and Elaine Ho.
So last time, guys, we talked about bread and butter medicine. We talked about diabetes management. This time we have another case that we see all the time. It's shoulder pain. This case is by Drs. Christopher White and Joel Atance from Blue Ridge Healthcare in Morganton, North Carolina, and the VCOM Carolinas campus. So shout out to our DOs at VCOM. So the case is as follows. An athletic 22-year-old white male presents with atrophy and weakness of left supraspinatus and infraspinatus muscles. So let's time travel back 3 months. Doop, 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 doop. That is the time travel sound. This patient underwent a fat grafting procedure, transplanting his abdominal adipose tissue to his left forehead to cosmetically correct an injury that he had previously sustained in a car accident.
What?
So, yeah, he's having kind of this totally unrelated, non-orthopedic surgery, moving fat from his belly to his forehead. 2 days after that surgery, the patient woke up with 10 out of 10 excruciating pain that was non-radiating and localized to the posterior aspect of his left shoulder. After 3 days of pain medication, the pain went away. It resolved spontaneously.
All right, ladies, I'm not getting
that. I know. So now we're fast forwarding again, into the future. It's 3 months later, and the patient is doing well. He's lifting weights, and he starts noticing weakness in his left arm. This went on for about 2 months, and then he started noticing a little bit of atrophy or wasting of some of the muscles, the supraspinatus and infraspinatus, around his shoulder. Yeah, so he goes to his doctor. He's kind of like, what's up? What's going on here? And the physical exam was significant for 3 out of 5 strength with abduction in that left arm and a positive empty can test on that side. No change in range of motion, no decreased range of motion. His vitals were normal, and otherwise, his review of systems was completely negative. So, Annie, what do you think about this?
Well, Carrie Beth, if you're presenting this, it's not going to be the usual stuff, right? So I think we can take a couple things off the table, like rotator cuff disease or injury, maybe something common like cervical disc disease, adhesive capsulitis, thoracic outlet syndrome. So all those, that too common for whatever is happening here. What about, I don't know, a neoplasm? Potentially grew in the area.
That's a really good thought, kind of a zebra thought, because, right, we're not having range of motion changes. We're not having any radiculopathy, nothing that would kind of illuminate or lead to any of the ideas that you mentioned at the beginning. So, yeah, I thought something was really fishy about this, too. The doc he went to ordered an MRI and a nerve conduction study, presumably an EMG. And interestingly, the MRI came back negative. No signs of inflammation, no muscle tears, no cysts, no abscesses, rotator cuff looking primo perfect. However, the nerve conduction study did show some abnormalities in the infraspinatus and supraspinatus musculature.
Well, that's really interesting. So a few things stood out to me, like that sudden intense pain that really didn't have anything to do with what happened to him. And then later he's had weakness, but he's still able to move his arms around. And then it doesn't seem like there's a full like radiation of nerves where it's affecting the nerve structure around it. And then the MRI was negative with all those shoulder symptoms. So it wasn't like it was from his traumatic event that he had before.
Exactly. Very puzzling. So listeners, what do you guys think? So the answer, what is Parsonage-Turner syndrome?
What?
Yeah, this is a thing.
I have never heard of this.
I haven't either. So it's known by many other names, apparently, also none of which I've ever heard, including brachioplexitis, neuralgic amyotrophy, or shoulder girdle neuritis.
try saying those five times.
I know.
So, doing a little research on these, the etiology is unknown, but some possible causes include, and this is a long list, so bear with me, trauma, infection, surgery, anesthetics, antibiotic therapy. I mean, this list gets weirder. Immunization, pregnancy, heavy exercise, and heredity.
That's like
so
anything.
For our patient, all the things. Which one of those did he have? We suppose it could be related to his surgery, which you think completely unrelated.
Right.
Fat injected into his face. But, you know, that was a surgery.
Yeah.
And there's also a very rare hereditary form that can be caused by an autosomal dominant variant in the SEPT gene, S-E-P-T gene, which generally occurs in the second decade of life with recurrent attacks in up to 75% of patients. The peak incidence of this overall is at the third and seventh decades, and this typically affects the upper trunk of the brachial plexus and its branches, and about 97% of disease, so overwhelming majority, is going to be asymmetric.
Yeah, and from the paper, they talked about how this condition was likely first identified in the late 19th century, but it wasn't until the 1940s when it was formally recognized by Parsonage and Turner. And it was historically rare.
It does, yeah. It'd be a great band name.
And historically rare, apparently, occurring about 2 to 3 out of 100,000 people. However, more recent findings suggest that it may actually be more common, as in 1 in 33 patients with new onset neck pain, shoulder, or arm complaints may actually have this Parsonage-Turner syndrome and are simply undiagnosed. So maybe they've been mistakenly thought to be more of the common conditions that we see and we just miss them.
Right, exactly. That's what I would have thought, but just by looking at the case initially. So things that can help us break this down to make the preliminary diagnosis, you're looking for three main characteristics. The first is severe pain. So an intense pain, typically categorized as a 9 to 10 out of 10 that will wake a patient up from sleep, was reported present in over 95% of the cases, and it manifests over a few days up to a week. The second characteristic that you're looking for is that there's no limitations in the passive range of motion. The third characteristic would be that the neurodeficits are not in the same root distribution. So what I mean by that is, in our patient's case, he did not experience any radiating pain, which would imply the same root distribution. A second MRI could potentially later see only the neurodeficit involving the suprascapular nerve.
Yep. All right. And the workup includes, we already mentioned the MRI. This helps exclude the more common causes of the shoulder pain, such as the rotator cuff pathologies, tears, capsulitis, and things of that sort. And a second study that could be helpful is a nerve conduction study. This shows abnormalities in where the nerves are affected. And in this case, it was the infraspinatus and supraspinatus muscle. And these abnormalities are usually seen within 3 weeks of onset of symptoms. And it definitely helps to localize the nerves that are affected.
Awesome. So now we've got some tips and tricks on how to identify and make a preliminary diagnosis. So moving on to the treatment aspect, unfortunately, there's no single or specific treatment modality that's been validated to help these patients. However, it's typically conservative to start off with and then would involve two phases.
All right, phase one. Phase one is the period of intense pain. So that's where the patient suddenly woke up with the 9 to 10 out of 10 pain. Treatment includes basically pain treatment. NSAIDs, opiates, steroids may be prescribed. They work at varying degrees of success. It depends on the patient. But this patient was treated successfully with these, as his pain was brought down to 2 out of 10 by the end of the treatment. And then the second phase is when the patient's pain has subsided, and the goal of this phase is to restore muscle strength and tone. So this treatment includes physical therapy for 8 to 12 weeks, which the patient was referred to. And during the physical therapy, they mentioned using things like TENS units, acupuncture, OMT.
There it is. I was waiting for the OMT components.
And other modalities that can help alleviate pain during the rehab. If they don't have that much recovery after 2 years, surgery might be indicated to help them out. But hopefully it doesn't get to that point.
Right. And overall prognosis is actually pretty good. So patients usually recover by about 3 years after the onset of their symptoms, Sounds like a long time, but if it's completely resolved and doesn't recur, then we're good. Unfortunately, 10% of the patients experienced continued deficits with regards to this, and some of them can occasionally have leftover minor weakness, particularly in abduction after 3 years. So focusing on that PT course, the strength training, and continued OMT, I think would really help these patients.
Awesome, guys. So in summary, Parsonage-Turner syndrome is rare, but it might not be as rare as we thought. It affects the upper trunk and branches of the brachial plexus. It presents with sudden, acute, intense pain, followed by motor deficits and muscle atrophy. MRI is usually unremarkable and doesn't really contribute to identifying the cause of this pain, but you may have specific EMG findings, like we did in this patient with his supra and infraspinatus. Treatment includes controlling the pain in that first phase and physical therapy to rebuild strength and muscle bulking in the second phase. Recovery can take up to 2 to 3 years. The increasing incidence of this condition tells us we've probably been misdiagnosing it before. We've been missing it. We've been overlooking it. As family medicine docs, we see shoulder pain all the time. Mm-hmm. So don't forget to keep this in the back of your head as one of your differentials. And I feel like I could really impress my attendings with this when I'm staffing in clinic next time. So do you guys think of any patients you've seen ever that you wonder in retrospect, was this what was going on?
You know, as osteopathic family physicians in particular, I think we are primed to identify this early.
Yeah.
So it's definitely something I'm going to keep in my differential. I haven't been aware of it and haven't diagnosed anybody with it, but looking at these statistics, it's very possible that I could have missed it in the past. So I'm going to keep this in the forefront when I see shoulder pain down the road.
Awesome. So you guys, this might sound crazy. I think we all have med school like hypochondriasis, and you know how we think we have everything. But in reading the article for this podcast, I feel like I might actually have Parsonage-Turner syndrome. I had completely unrelated non-orthopedic surgery 3 months ago. I woke up that weekend and had really persistent shoulder pain. And I kept telling my husband, I'm like, how do you think they had me? Like, when I was anesthetized, like, do you think, your arms are usually out, as those of you guys that have been in the OR know. But I was like, you know, I remember laying there and getting set up. It didn't hurt. And it was not excruciating. So I will say, you know, that kind of misses our first checkpoint of intense excruciation. Mm-hmm. But it was persistent. Went away after 2 to 3 days. And now I'm 3 months down the line, and I've been having weakness and abduction of my left arm.
Oh, my God.
For real. So I was reading this article.
All right, where's the OMT table?
I know. So I've been having my outlet treated and doing a lot of OMT, and I'm getting a lot of relief from it. So I definitely think, just no matter what it is, OMT's been huge with feeling better, and I think it's probably thoracic outlet syndrome. But, you know.
OMT, guys.
I might be a unique case of the good old PTS, so.
Whoa.
That is fascinating. Well, hopefully you continue to recover.
Oh, yeah. I am sure I will be fine. I know. I will.
All right. Stay tuned, listeners.
Yeah. Exactly.
To be continued.
Dot, dot, dot.
All right, so with that really surprising, awesome story, actually, that's a wrap for this episode. So thank you guys for listening, and until next time, may a white cloud forever float by your side.
Bye, guys.
Bye.